to order. In attendance, we have Senator Adams, Senator Lehman, and myself, Senator Miller. We have not yet got a quorum, however, quorum is on the way, but we will go ahead and take up, start the public testimony process. One item that we did have on the calendar that was originally scheduled, however, we are rolling it to a future calendar, although at this time we're not sure which one it will be, but that is SCR 20, the reopening of the AJ Mine. The first item we're going to take up on today's calendar is House Bill 191, an act relating to cost recovery by contractors who operate state-owned hatcheries, and Representative Williams, who's the prime sponsor, is in attendance. Bill, I'm going to go ahead and...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, and the members of the Senate Resources Committee, for scheduling the bill and giving me the opportunity to testify. Several years ago, legislation was enacted by, to allow regional agriculture associations to conduct contract with the state to operate hatcheries with the state, which the state has built and owns. This helps relieve the state of the expensive burden of running the hatcheries. Under these contracts, the state continues to own the facilities, but the contractor assumes the operating responsibilities and expense. As state revenues have declined, agriculture associations have been cooperative about agreeing to operate many hatcheries under the contract, rather than see them closed down for the lack of state funding. However, the language in current law has caused some logistical and financial problems for the contractors and has made it unfeasible to get some of the state's hatcheries under contract. Current law says that the contractor may harvest and sell fish returning to the contracted hatchery to cover the cost of operating that hatchery. This cost recovery harvest is intended to make it financially feasible for the contractor to operate the hatchery. But now that a number of hatcheries are under such contracts, we find that the original language regarding allowable cost recovery activities is too restrictive. For example, taking an aquaculture association that has a number of its own hatcheries and then contracts to run one of the state's hatcheries. If the state hatchery has a bad year, the association must subsidize it with money it has generated at its other facilities. However, the law only allows cost recovery funds generated at the state-owned hatchery to be used for operation of that facility. So the shuffling of funds can't go the other way if it is one of their own facilities that has the bad year. This places some unfair financial risk on groups we are trying to convince to accept the responsibility of running our state hatcheries. Under House Bill 91, the contractor may use revenue from the state hatcheries in the same ways that they can now use monies generated at their own facilities. Under this bill, cost recovery money can flow in both directions between the contractor's own facilities and those contracted to run for the state. Besides reducing the financial risk, the ability to move funds around and among facilities to adjust to changing circumstances also amplifies the accounting procedures of the contractors. The bill also allows capital expenditures from cost recovery funds. This will help them maintain or upgrade facilities. All of this increased flexibility is aimed at making the takeover of the state-owned hatcheries affordable for these nonprofit associations. Passage of the bill will help to accomplish the goal of weaning hatchery operations off state funds and will help ensure that they can be successfully operated after the transaction. House Bill 191 is supported by the Aquaculture Associations, United Fishermen of Alaska, and the Department of Fish and Game. No one has expressed opposition to the bill, and it has passed the House unanimously. I would very much appreciate your support of this legislation. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you. For the record, I'd like to say that Senator Zaroff and Senator Pierce and Senator Frank has also joined us, so we do now have a quorum. Are there questions? Again. Okay. I do understand we have some people on teleconference. I do not have the list of those folks yet, so if on teleconference, if they would just go ahead up. Step up and give us. Okay, I do have a list. I guess first one is we'll go to is Sitka. If you just state your name and any organization that you may be representing.
Thank you. My name is Bruce Bach, and I'm the operations manager for Northern Southeast Regional Agriculture Association. Would you like to hear my testimony at this point?
Yes, go right ahead, please.
Thank you. I'd like to testify on behalf of the bill, on behalf of the Northern Southeast Regional Agriculture Association. I believe the bill is important in a couple of ways. One is that it allows us to have a single financial plan for the corporation. We believe that the strength of the overall program is enhanced by diversification both in the species that we raise as well as the sites that we operate. And we know from experience that adult survival goes up and down, and markets do the same thing. And it's healthy for us to be able to allow one project to depend on another at times to keep them all operating and producing fish for the common good. The second item in the bill that is important is to allow revenues generated by cost recovery to be used for construction. At Tim Falls right now, which was a state hatchery and that we have operated since 1988, the housing for the temporary employees has been intense, and these tents have reached the end of their useful life and are looking very seriously to build a bunkhouse. We need to be able to use cost recovery money to help the association build that project, since the financial burden falls to the association to add that improvement to the state facility. So we would really appreciate your support on the bill and encourage you to approve it. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, let's go to Kenai and Mr. Tom Mears. Kenai, are you online? Or Soldatna? Kenai Soldatna. Okay. Okay, let's go to Cordova and we can come back. Mr. Olson?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, my name is Jeff Olson. I'm operations manager with Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation, and I'm here speaking on behalf of John McMullen, the FISWAC president and the corporation today. And for my testimony, I would like to read an excerpt of a letter sent by Mr. McMullen to Carl Moses, chairman of the House Special Committee on Fisheries. This bill is very meaningful to FISWAC. We fund a state hatchery located near Baxter on the Volcano River. The state has asked us to accept full responsibility funding the facility's operation. There is no opportunity for cost recovery at the Volcano hatchery because the fish arrive there in spawning condition. Therefore, we must fund that facility with revenue earned at other hatcheries such as the Main Bay Sockeye Salmon Hatchery in Prince William Sound. Main Bay Hatchery is owned by the state but operated by FISWAC. Current regulations prevent us from using Main Bay cost recovery revenue to fund another hatchery. House Bill 191 will enable us to fund the Gulcana Hatchery with Main Bay Hatchery revenue, which is acceptable to the gillnet fishermen since both hatcheries principally supply the gillnet fishery plus the subsistence and dead net fisheries in the Cobb River. Thanks.
Thank you. And with that, we will go back to Kenai Soldatna. They're not online. Okay. Is there anyone here in the audience that would like to testify on House Bill 191? Jerry? Go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, my name is Jerry McKeon, President of United Fishermen of Alaska and Cordova District Fishermen United. And I'll just say that we support this bill. One of the problems is Gulcana Hatchery doesn't have any cost recovery, so we have to take the existing funds out of our existing hatchery and the cost recovery, and this way we could be able to manipulate and move funds around from hatchery to hatchery, whatever program that would be needed. So I think that was kind of overlooked when we originally transferred these hatcheries. So I appreciate if you move the bill out.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none. Is there any committee discussion? What is the pleasure of the committee? Senator Adams.
I move House Bill number 191 from committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 191 has moved from committee with individual recommendations. The next item we will take up will be Senate Bill 341, an act relating to the termination date of the Alaska Tourism Marketing Council and providing for an effective date. In your packet, you will see a proposed committee substitute, which basically extends the sunset date for 2 years instead of four as in the original legislation, and it also ups the percentage that the industry will have to contribute from 15% to 25%. Senator Adams.
What brought the CS on, Mr. Chairman? The last way we were at the tourism market, we were just going to extend the date of the tourism market. What brought on the 25%?
What brought on the 25% was basically a feeling, myself included, and of course I'm very heavily related in the tourism industry, but I think that the industry needs to be doing more into contributing money into the marketing programs that we are doing. I know ASME is doing, I believe, its fair share, and I think that with just discussions that many of us had, that we thought that industry could do more, especially in a time of declining revenue.
But, you know, the ABA also has almost $5 million they put into in-kind contributions to the industry, and I just can't see it. We give tax breaks to oil companies in the decline, like we just gave them $10, $12 million the other day in the changing the nickel a barrel. We took the money away from you. Yes, you took the money away.
You've been reading the Anchorage Daily News too
much.
No,
I haven't.
That isn't what that bill
did.
That
Well, let's try to stay on this bill.
Well, he brought it up.
Yeah. But that's the truth.
It is not
the truth,
Al.
On that particular
subject. Well, we can debate that bill.
Well, we can debate that bill until the cows come home, but that bill is now in the House and it's no longer before this body or before this committee. Senator Adams on 341.
On 341, no. That was I don't support the concept of increasing in tourism the 25% that associations will have to contribute, but I do support the extension of the council.
Okay. Could we have a motion before us to adopt the committee substitute?
I move to adopt CS Senate Bill 341, Resources.
Okay, is there objection?
Object.
Okay, all in favor of the adoption of the committee substitute, please raise your right hand. All against? Okay, the committee substitute has been adopted.
Mr. Chairman? Yes, sir. I noticed that the Tourism Council there is being extended to 96 as opposed to 98 in the original bill. Was it 2 years extension rather than four? What was the...
Just to basically to take a look and see how they're doing and come back and report to the legislature in a couple of years and see how things are going. We have nobody signed up to testify. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on Senate Bill 341? Just state your name for the record.
My name is Karen Cowart. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Visitors Association. I'd like to testify in support of the Alaska Tourism Marketing Council and certainly not in support of the current committee substitute that would have the association contributing 25% of the total operating expenses of the council. Currently, the Alaska Tourism Marketing Council is a council that implements a program to market our destination to the United States and Canada. We currently have about 1,600 advertisers in the marketing council's publication, the Alaska Visitors, the official Alaska State Planner. I think you each have a copy of it. We have increased rates across the board almost every year that now has a narrative advertiser paying $500 for a 30-word ad. If we continue to raise this 30-word narrative ad rate, some businesses have indicated that they will no longer be able to take part in the state's cooperative marketing program. We feel it's in the best interest of the state and the population of Alaska to continue funding Tourism Marketing Council and continue operations of the council so that small businesses will have an opportunity to reach the marketplace that they so desperately need to reach. They cannot do it on their own. It needs a concerted effort of the entire industry. We currently have advertisers that are paying from $250,000 down to $500, and we feel that that brings everyone into the fold in the industry and helps everyone participate in a program. We also feel like the jobs that are created in tourism are very important. They're entrepreneur jobs. Many of our jobs, 80% of the industry, are those small businesses that have a gross income of $400,000 and employ only 6 to 8 people. Those are the backbones of the tourism industry, and that's the backbone of Alaska. And we hope that this body will see that the tourism industry does, in fact, pay its way through not only our contribution in cash, but our in-kind contribution in support of the marketing program. I have supplied to Senator Adams an in-kind report that we have just compiled for 1993 that shows that the industry did contribute product and services for generic marketing of the state in the amount of $4.9 million. And I think that's a significant amount of donation that's not currently being recognized. So I would ask that this committee review that and look at what the industry has done to support itself. We are not like ASME. We have a product that's quite diversified. Many people are part of the tourism industry that don't recognize that they're part of the tourism industry. It's not a network that can be drawn in a small circle. It's not something that's easily definable, and it's certainly not easily explained. I do ask the committee to reconsider and to support the Tourism Marketing Council's reinstatement through 1998 at a 15% cash level. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Frank. I don't know if you covered it while I was out of the room, but I was under the impression that right now, while it's not in statute, the match was budgeted at 22%. Is that correct?
No, the match was budgeted at 20%, and the industry was able to make the 20% match. We also were able to pay the pro rata share of the vacation planner, which was about $450,000. Now, that was based on a program that the state had last year that was a $7 million program. Obviously, there's a lot more value to a program of that magnitude than what we're currently looking at for this fiscal year of 4.492. As an advertiser will look at the entire product and the entire marketing program and how many gross impressions that program will make and how many visitors or conversions we'll see in a program. As the state and the industry's dollars go down and the program is not as effective, so will our ability to attract advertisers in the vacation planner, which is, in fact, how we raise our match.
What did you? I was confused on that. You said there was a 20% match, and then there was another 400. What was that?
Yeah, the 20% match was the governor's match, the governor's budget last year that the legislature approved. The industry was able to raise enough money to make that 20% match. And in addition to that, we have to pay the pro rata share of the vacation planner. If you look in there, all the pages that have ads, the production and color costs that are attributed to those ads, we pay that separate from the match.
That confuses me. How does that work?
Well, we paid for the production of the advertising along with a 20% cash contribution.
Oh, you mean individuals paid for their own production costs on the ad?
No, individuals paid us a set fee for the ad.
Okay.
And then in addition to our 20% match that we made last year, we also paid the state our pro rata share of the vacation planner cost. So we raised enough money.
How did you raise that $450? How did that come?
Through the ad sales and through label sales. But the cash contribution.
How is that different than?
Well, you would have to change.
Now.
Yeah, you would have to change the statute to back out the pro rata cost of the vacation planner. Currently, the statute says that the industry will match at 15% plus a pro rata share of the cost of the production of the planner.
So, if you took the 20% match cash plus the 450, where would that put you in terms of?
Approximately almost 23%.
Okay.
But the way this would read, it would tag on to the original statute, just changing our 25% match. It would change it from 15 to 25. Plus, we would be responsible for the pro rata share of the planner costs.
Okay.
At a time.
So that isn't shown here. It's just in existing law.
It's existing law, yes, sir.
Okay. I think I understand. Well,
then it would also be much more difficult for the industry to raise that cash since the program has been so diluted in size.
Now, okay, so through ad sales, you get the 20% match plus the 450, all in the form of advertising sales.
Correct.
Okay, I understand that. I think I have one here. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that's here to testify on Senate Bill 341. Seeing none, what's the...
I do have a question for Karen Nashley.
Sure, Pierce.
I appreciate finally seeing on paper the in-kind contributions. What did Holland America do?
Well, that's Holland, Gray Line, and West Tours. And so, you know...
They're so far out of line of anybody else. That's half of your in-kind. It's $2,400,000 from Holland Direct.
They often take entire, they'll take maybe 300 to 500 travel agents through an inside passage trip. They will actually donate an entire motor coach operation for a fam trip, mini motor coaches for fam trips. There's also a line in there for Westmark Hotels, which is another Holland America subsidiary. So, yes, it is large. I have the accommodating the report that I can give you, and which lists every item that they have down on their report.
Okay, now are these fam tours that are done at the under the auspices of the either the ATMC or the Division of Tourism, or some of these, you say, they might put 800 people on one of their ships to bring about that?
No, it is a generic, yeah. It's a generic promotion. It's not for their company. It has to be with two companies, and it has to be generic to Alaska.
I mean,
they're not, yeah, for instance, they're not bringing somebody up to showcase Holland America's product. They're bringing people up, travel writers, travel agents, various fans, donating product in support of convention and visitor bureau fans.
Thank you. Any further questions? I would also like to note for the record that Senator Donnelly has joined us. Any further questions? Committee discussion. Wishes of the committee. Senator Lehman.
Move to discharge CS for Senate Bill 341 resources with recommendations.
Is there objection?
Objection.
Okay. All those in favor of discharging Senate Bill 341 resources, raise your right hand. All against? 341 has been discharged from committee. And the last item we'll be taking up is House Bill 398, land conveyed to and from municipalities. It's Representative Boberg's bill. Dave, if you want to go ahead and state your name for the record.
Yeah.
It would be my intention just to go ahead and take the public testimony. Senator Adams has asked that we kind of deal with this as a package. There are two other land bills coming across. And at that time, we'll hear those, and we can kind of deal with them as a package. But I'd like to go ahead and get the public testimony out of the way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dave Kamrath. I'm staff for Representative Olberg's office. Today, I'd like to briefly read the sponsor statement, if you'll kindly read with me, because I'm not the best public speaker in this building. At a time when the state of Alaska is mandating a greater measure of self-sufficient on local governments and promoting economic development at the local level, current state statutes work against second-class cities and municipalities incorporated after April 1, 1994. In particular, Title 38 of Alaska statutes fail to recognize second-class cities and municipalities eligible to obtain tide and submerged lands, despite the fact that home rule first-class cities incorporated prior to April 1, 1964 have this right. Excuse me. The effect of this oversight places coastal second-class cities and municipalities at a disadvantage as they pursue economic development along the waterfronts. CS for HB 398 resources allows for all municipalities, home rule, and second-class cities and boroughs to apply for tide and submerged lands and to have them conveyed. There would be four conditions to meet in order for this to happen. One, lack of unreasonable interference with public access resulting from the proposed use of the land. Application for conveyance by the municipality with the municipality paying all costs. Compatibility of the proposed use of the land classification or land use plan for the area. Need for the land for development. Land conveyed under this bill is subject to the public trust doctrine. Title to land conveyed under the bill would revert to the state if the municipality is dissolved. Conveyance of land under this bill would be not affect the general land entitlements of municipalities provided as Alaska Statute 29.65. Section 1 permits the director of the Division of Land to quit claim land to municipalities to correct errors or omissions of the municipality when equitable determinant would result to a person due to the person's reliance on the errors or omissions of the municipality. Section 3 of this bill is repealed in Section 3 of this bill repeals Section 1 effective January 1st, 1998.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Ron, are you here to testify on this?
In CRA, we've got a couple more bills in CRA, two more.
Is this bill here in CRA?
Go right ahead, Ron.
Mr. Chairman, Ron Swanson, Director, Division of Land. Sure, we do support the concepts embodied in this bill. Section 1 would create a fix in inequity at Skagway where land was mistakenly conveyed to third-party purchasers when the municipality did not have ownership. This would allow us to convey ownership to Skagway and then to those subdivision owners. Section 2 of the bill does allow the division to convey land to municipalities where development has occurred or will be occurring so they can have local control and limit some liability to the state. Another important portion of Section 2 is that it fixes an inequity that currently exists. Municipalities that were formed previous to 1964 could obtain title to titlings in front of their municipal boundaries. There are, since that time, there's been 56 additional municipalities that have been formed. First, this would allow those ownership type conditions. Without, would be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Donovan, and then Senator Pierce.
And page 4, top of the page, there's a list of when this will occur, and the commissioner shall convey, and then there's these conditions. It seems like there's no option there. When these events occur, then there's a mandated conveyance.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Donnelly, that's the way I read it. If those four conditions have been met, the commissioner has no authority but to convey to the municipality. It could, I guess, create a conflict. If you want to eliminate a conflict, if there's a greater public interest, you'd have to use the word may instead.
I think I would
be supportive of that, Mr. Chairman, using the word may instead of shall.
Senator Pierce.
Thank you. We know the Skagway situation. How many other situations that we know of exist where we've got platinum titles, but this statute could help us?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pierce, Skagway is the only one that I'm aware of that fit under Section 1 of the bill, and that's why it does have a sunset clause of 1998 waiver, whatever it is. So it'll go away. But I think Section 2 would allow us to fix similar problems.
Senator Adams.
I know you'll be holding this for a couple bills that's coming. There's one in from CRA with Senate Judiciary. There's the Lake and Pinland. I will be submitting the amendments at that particular time when we get. But I do, I've also got an amendment here that would require public hearings in this piece of legislation and make it optional and has to be in the best interest of our state. And the last one is no critical habitat land. So I will be offered at that. And I would like perhaps you have a chance to review that particular amendment. But the discussing the specifics, because we've always talked about VUUs throughout the state of Alaska, and that's one I'm interested in.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Adams, this particular bill says it has to be classified for waterfront development before the transfer can occur, and that's basically a settlement type category. It would fit your VUU type definition. But this particular bill does not affect municipal entitlements. If it meets those four requirements, the land can be conveyed and is not charged against the municipal as entitlement. Any more questions?
Just a question. Thank you, Chairman. In the sponsor's statement there, they say that there's oversight by, I guess, must be assumed DNR to recognize the second-class cities municipal eligibility obtained tying in submerged lands. Was this an oversight?
Mr. Chairman, that predates my knowledge, but if it had been an oversight, it would have been the way the law was passed. We followed whatever it said to do, and we were only allowed to classify or convey lands to I believe it was home rule and first-class cities. We were not allowed to convey them to second-class cities.
Maybe it was an oversight, then.
364 predates me.
We're Senator when you need.
I'm sure we'll hear about it and find it.
I'm sure you will. Any further questions? Thank you, Ron. I have one person on teleconference, Lee Sharp in Anchorage.
Good
Go ahead, Lee.
Good afternoon. I'm Lee Sharp. Appreciate the opportunity to testify. I represent the Wichita Borough and the City of St. George. I'd also state that here at the hearing room, there's another representative from Wichita Borough and from the City of Sandpoint. They both support the bill. I'd like to point out that in statehood, when the title of the Ridgelands Act was adopted, it required that the state convey all tide lands, not just some or not just what was needed or not what was in the best interest of the state, but required to convey all tide lands to first-class and home rule cities. That was all tide lands within their boundaries. They didn't have to show that they had a need for it or that it was properly classified or any of that. It was simply required that it be conveyed, period. Municipalities did have an obligation to determine which of those tide lands had the developer used by others and to reconvey those kind of tide lands to folks who had those kind of preferences. But what this bill would do is return a little bit of equity to the situation. This thing was filed in 64.
How does it fit to those other parties if the state takes
one step? And boroughs and other cities that have formed first class since 64 can at least get the tide lands, can at least get the tide lands that are needed for development within their municipal boundaries. Presently, NRVC statute, as I understand it, that they have no authority to convey tide lands to municipalities. They can only lease. This clause of the state to continue to be the owner of the land, and therefore they have some sort of liability for activities that occur on that land. As a result, these leases, which you have to go through a lengthy process to begin with to get the lease, the leases wind up with a number of what municipalities view as somewhat onerous provisions. Requires that municipalities and the state have an ongoing relationship in which the state more or less supervises what goes on in the tide lands. It requires generally that, for instance, that the city or the borough submit all contracts and subleases to the state for their review and approval. In other words, the municipalities have some difficulty in simply moving ahead with the development of their tide lands as they see to be in the best interest of their municipality. So there's the ongoing liability of the state, there's the ongoing involvement of the state, and if the state is not staffed up to quickly respond to analyze or review a lease or contract that's submitted, a project is delayed. And you know, we all understand the reasons that leases and contracts don't get reviewed as soon as they're submitted. There is a staffing problem. This bill, we believe, would eliminate all, if not most, of these sorts of problems. As far as the public interest goes, I think that that's already been addressed to the extent that folks have noted that in subsection A3, the land has to have been classified by the state for waterfront development, or has to be shown in a comprehensive plan or coastal zone management plan for the kind of use that's proposed. In other words, there has been a public process that has been gone through with hearings or submission of comments that has preceded this classification. We believe that that provides the appropriate opportunity for the public to comment on the use of the tide lands. Again, the City of St. George and Lucia East Borough, and I believe the City of Sandpoint that's here, all support the legislation, and we urge that you report it out as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Are there any questions? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify on House Bill 398? Jerry?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry McKeon. I'll be just testifying for myself today, and just to let you know, my interest in this bill is for the small house owner where they've built a little bit over the surveyor has made a mistake and they're on state land by 2 or 3 inches or a couple feet, and this would solve that problem to be able to the municipalities to be able to trade that land and solve some of these problems for the homeowner that can't get title to their their property right now and close their loans.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Lehman.
Jerry, this homeowner is in Cordova, right?
Yes.
He came and testified before, I think it was the CRA committee, and I was trying to find that bill or notes or something from it, and I thought it was the same issue, but it was exactly as Mr. McCune says, and the landowner has offered or was willing to trade some of his other tied lands just so he can have it. He doesn't want to move his house, which is, as you say, just, you know, I don't know, probably a foot or two over the line. It makes an incredible amount of sense. Actually, I think the city of Cordova would be better off to accept the trade. That, from what I can see, they're getting a better deal out of it. But
yeah, he has tied lands.
They both end up winning.
Plus, he can't close his loan because he took the readings off, if I got this right, Magnetic North instead of True North.
I think
that's correct. Yeah. You have to be off True North when you take your land survey and not Magnetic North. Otherwise, you could be off, and that's how.
Did he do his own survey?
No, he had somebody else, I think.
One of his friends?
Well, there is several surveyors there, but that's not the only guy that has this problem. This little problem is kind of all over the place as you kind of research it a little bit. It might be only a couple feet or 1 foot.
He had to go and get Bill Parker to advise him on how to tap that surveyor. See that judgment, Bill Parker one?
Oh, yes.
Just
copy.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Jerry. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 398? Seeing none, we will be holding this bill. There are two other pieces of legislation that's coming along that Senator Adams asked that we hold it, and as soon as we get them, we'll deal with them as a package. Senator Donnelly, looks like you have a question.
Well, I was interested in making that change because it seems like it's a pretty big leap from not being able to transfer to being mandated to transfer when these conditions are met, whether or not it's in the public interest.
I think Senator Adams, I think, is on that same line on a suggested change that he will be bringing up when we bring the bill back up before us. But I think Senator Adams is pretty much on that same line. It has to be on the best interest of the state and everything else. So I would just like to say the next meeting will be Wednesday. We'll be taking up House Bill 218, repeal of the 58-foot limit for same vessels, and House Bill 230, vessel fees. And then on Thursday, we will be back with the Fish Board with public testimony from 5 to 6 and committee questions from 6 to 7. And that's right. Gonna make you stay. To make you stay here, Al.
Yeah.
So, and then on Friday we have some House joint resolutions. So if there's no further business to come before the committee, we are adjourned.